Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love. CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic health share ministry to provide an affordable health sharing program rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthshare.com. CMF Curo. Healthcare fully alive.
Good evening. If you're feeling kind of low about the dues you've been paying, just stay right here with Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Glad you could join us tonight. I'm Paul Morano, your normal host. And I have an abnormal guest. No, actually, he's very normal as a guest, but not as a human being, as you will see. 978-454-4900 is our phone number here at BTS Radio. 978-454-4980. Second week back from a summer hiatus. Glad you could join us again if you have listened to Beneath the Surface in the past. We still have the same format, the same rotating guest schedule, and last but not least, the same producer, Miss Cindy. What's happening, Cindy?
Oh, I'm just hanging out.
Just hanging? Doing your Cindy producing thing?
Just doing it, making sure everything working good.
Awesome. Now, Cindy, are you going to surprise me with new and different bumper music in and out of commercials tonight?
I'll try to.
All right, good. Good. Looking forward to it. And then you can play our regular theme song at the end of the show. All right, so we are here from 10 to 11, as we are every Monday night, bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, our topic for the evening is rival conceptions of God. Yes, rival conceptions of God. What does the word God mean? And do people of different religions basically mean the same thing? For example, do Muslims and Christians have an essentially different view of God? Or do they worship the same God? How have people conceived of God throughout history? For these and a whole lot more questions being answered, I defer to my guest, second Monday of the week, of the month, of the week.
Second Monday of the week.
Yeah, how many Mondays are there each week? I think there's only one, right? My second Monday of the month guest and fill-in guest whenever I need one. There he is, Mr. Robert LeBlanc.
Oh, very well said, Paul.
Yes.
LeBlanc.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, but that's what you should have followed Robert with.
That's very good, though.
Very good.
That's like my second nickname for you.
Robert.
My first is Bobbert.
Yeah, that would work. Robert would work.
Yeah, you like that one better?
Yeah, I think I like it better than Bobbert.
Yeah, you kind of, you know, you have a bareness to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And that somehow there's a row in front of that. We'll have to figure out what that means.
So if you want to get in touch with us, please do. 978-454-4980. That's the second time I had a problem with 4980. What is with me tonight?
You're not used to it.
I'm not used to it yet.
You haven't been saying it for months and months.
Yeah, except for last week. We were here last week.
Right.
Yes, yeah. On Labor Day. If you don't want to call us, which I hope you do, give us a shout on facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. That's all one word, fellow truth seekers, after slash. And of course, slash is not a word. It's a symbol. And if you don't want to do that, email us at btsradio980@aol.com. Okay. Anything worth saying about you lately before we get on to the topic at hand?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head, except I've been thinking about 9/11 today, since it is the anniversary of 9/11.
16 years ago this morning.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember that day.
Oh, I remember exactly where I was watching it.
It's one of those days. It's like they used to say for JFK when he was assassinated, but I think we're a little bit too young to remember that day. Maybe you remember it, but
No, I don't. I don't. I was too young.
I was 1 year old then, but
You're an old man.
An old man.
But sometimes they say that about the Challenger accident.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I do remember where I was.
I do too.
And then there's 9/11, 16 years ago this morning. Are there any other events in our lifetime that is one of those events where most people remember where they were?
Well, you named the two that were really big there.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking anything that had really nationwide impact. Of course, 9/11 was a worldwide impact. I remember the entire world was saying, "Wow, what a horrifying thing we stand with the United States."
Right. And there was approximately 2 weeks post 9/11 where the country was fervently patriotic and religious. Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, it was just on an emotional level, and because of that, it died down. It really wasn't all that substantial. But it lasted about 2 weeks.
I thought it lasted a little bit longer than that.
Okay. Tell me about your memory.
Well, I was not back in the Catholic Church at the time. But I remember I was at work. I saw on television, you know, the planes heading into the buildings, you know.
You saw it happen live?
Not live. Okay. I was seeing, I remember I was at work and my coworker said, he had a radio next to his desk, and he said, a plane just hit a building in New York, or something like that. And it wasn't just a few minutes later, he goes, another plane did that same thing. Yeah. And I'm going, we're at war. I mean, that was the first thought that happened in my mind. We're at war.
Interesting.
Work really just stopped. And people, I remember everybody in the office, they're just huddling around this makeshift kind of TV setup. They had aluminum foil for TV antennas. And we were watching this kind of grainy sort of thing, seeing the picture of the plane flying into the towers.
The replays of it.
The replays of it. And I remember the boss's wife, she was, I never really considered her to be a close friend or anything like that, but she just grabbed my arm and hung on to it.
Wow.
You know, this is just a very, well, she and her husband were both from Brooklyn.
Okay.
And so that was home to them, you know.
Yeah, to us it was more almost, I wouldn't say theoretical, but for those who don't know New York all that well, it's something on the television. But to them it was home.
To them it was home. Yeah. And they let us out of work early. We got out of work by noon, and you know, I remember running through this entire thing, driving home. I had an hour commute back home.
Yeah.
And I moped around at home. I turned on the TV just to I don't know, just keep me company.
Mm.
And I left it on the station, and I just was really just kind of zoning out. Mm. And what came on, it was a movie channel. I don't know if it was Bravo or Turner Classic Movies or something like that. And they had the waterfront, on the waterfront on that that night. And I'd never really seen it before.
Yeah.
And I love that show. And I love to see it whenever it's on. It has stars Marlon Brando and Carl Malden. And it's about the mob controlling the longshoremen on the docks there. And Carl Malden was a priest. And I remember the priest gave a sermon on the docks there.
Okay.
That just blew me away. And it was something like this. The priest says, "You think the crucifixion only happened on Calvary? You know, you better think again." And then he starts going through a litany of wrongs that have been happening on the docks.
Mm.
And he says, that's a crucifixion. You know, this is like the mob preventing, you know, people from doing the right thing, you know, pressuring good people. That's a crucifixion. And that just really seared into my mind. You know, here I am in the process of coming back into the church and have this imagery of the crucifixion associated with a terrible wrong that's happening. And here...
And maybe you were thinking about your own life and saying,
I was thinking about my own life, but I was also thinking about 9/11. I'm going, I'm making this direct connection.
Ah, yeah, yeah. And that was the night of 9/11, that movie?
That was the night of 9/11.
Okay. Well, I have a quicker story about my remembrance of 9/11. I was at my parents' house. They lived in Burlington, Massachusetts. And they were lounging around. I think they were still in their pajamas. It was like around 9 to 9:15, 9:30, right around that time in the morning. And up came behind us, or in front of us actually, knocking on the door, somebody who either delivered something or the paper boy or one of those kind of people that delivered something to the home, maybe UPS man. And he said, "Hey, did you hear that something just... knocked into the or flew into the World Trade Center, some kind of accident." And we're there, really? That's weird. So we figured, all right, we'd turn on the news to see if he's, you know, if he's just full of it or he really had some kind of story that we didn't know about. We turned on the news and it was all over the news. And at that point, it was still thought to be an accident of some sort. And as they were trying to figure things out, and as we were watching the news, within minutes, all of a sudden I saw something else hit the other building. And it happened so quick that I don't even know if my parents noticed it. And I said, "Did you see that? I'm pretty sure something else just happened there." So I saw the second one hit live as it happened on television. And then, of course... Eventually, all the news people were saying, "Well, maybe this is a terrorist attack," and then eventually you found out that it was intentional. Yeah. That's my story. That's my memory of it.
Right, right.
If anybody out there listening has any memories of where they were and what they were doing on 9/11 as it happened, give us a call here at WCAP Radio. Actually, Beneath the Surface Radio here at WCAP 978-454-4980, and let us know your story.
Well, I was thinking that we probably could segue from here into a talk about God, because...
Sure, but I don't want this to stop people calling up and telling us their story of 9/11, but let us segue, yeah.
Yeah, let us go into the topic
into
at hand.
Into the topic at hand.
Well, I know some people, they look at this... event of 9/11,
yeah,
and they say, "Well, they were all Muslims that were doing this. This is a terrible thing to happen, and therefore they put this on all religions, saying that all religion is bad because of the 9/11 event, sort of thing."
I don't know if I've met any people that have actually gone that far. I've heard of people saying that Islam is bad and 9/11 is one big reason,
but
not all religion. Have you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And you actually know the person. He's a common friend for the both of us.
That's interesting. Now I'll have to think about this.
Well, it's not. I don't think it's directly tied to 9/11, but rather, you know, here are Muslim fanatics. All religious fanatics are bad because we have the evidence here.
Religious fanatics can be bad.
They can be, but I think the problem that I have with it is not that religious fanatics can be bad, but rather that this sort of fanaticism is used to tar all religion completely.
Yeah, and usually religious fanatics are peaceful; they're just a little nutty, right?
Yeah, it depends. Yeah. I really think
By the way, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think if I were to say, I like to consider myself a radical Christian, a fanatic for Christ.
Okay, time out. That's what I was about to say, but then I deferred to you. When I say fanatic, I don't mean somebody who is zealous. That's two very different things. To me, a person who is zealous and passionate for something, nothing wrong with that. That, in fact, that's awesome.
Right.
Especially if it relates to religion. But what I mean by fanatic is somebody who has twisted and turned religiosity into a self-serving, selfish kind of thing.
Oh, well, I guess that could exist,
and then
but
acting that out.
What I'm thinking about is a person who actually really internalizes the Christian message. Mm. I mean, going flying into two buildings is I can't conceive of that as a radical internalization of Christianity.
No,
I just can't see that.
No, Mother Teresa is a Christian radical.
Right, right.
Somebody who's zealous for her Christian faith.
Well, I think we could point to all the saints pretty much. And if you want to see what an example of a Christian radical is to just look at the saints.
Just look at the lives of the saints.
Right.
Yeah. All right, well, we have some music that is telling us, and she did not surprise us with different music, but... Cindy behind the glass, that is. But we will be back in a moment to continue our conversation and to delve beneath the surface on the question of different or rival conceptions of God. 978-454-4980 is our phone number if you want to jump in right now. I'm Paul Morano, that's Bob. Be back right after this. Yeah. Doesn't it make you want to move, Bob?
I'm trying to figure out what it is. Now I lay me down
not to sleep. All right. This is something only Cindy knows. And maybe thousands and millions of other people, but I certainly don't. Cindy, what is it?
Bare naked ladies. Who needs sleep?
Who needs sleep? I can relate. By the way, that's Cindy from Cindy's Vinyl Vault, who has a show three nights a week here at WCAP, one of which is right after Beneath the Surface. So if you're a vaulter, you know what her show is like. If you're not, check it out. 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, Monday nights. Okay, Mr. Robert.
Hello.
So let's get into the meat and potatoes here, that there are and have been throughout world history different conceptions of God.
Sure have.
Now, it is safe to say that, and we know this by virtue of cave paintings and the great literature since the beginning of history and beyond, that the human species is a religious species by nature. Every people, every culture has had some kind of religiosity, some kind of understanding or religious sense that there is something beyond. And various throughout history, various conceptions of the term God, and I would say, well, let's just start off with two of the most basic. One is polytheism, the other is monotheism.
Right, right. Well, polytheism we know is many gods.
A belief in many gods. Yeah.
Belief in many gods, and a lot of ancient cultures, you know, they had deities for various things, like a deity for the city, or they would have a deity for various sorts of things, like there would be a god of war.
Yeah, and various things of nature were seen to be run by or created and run by different gods. The god of war, the god of the sun, the god of the ocean or the deep. Many of us know Greek and Roman mythology and Norse mythology, and there's a whole slew of cultures. Even today, I was just talking to somebody who's from China, who have always believed in a form of ancestor worship.
Right, right.
Yeah, and that has been very popular throughout the earth.
Right. And I think sometimes like an ancestor would be promoted to a godlike thing.
A godlike stature.
Well, yet we had people who I think were real, like Hercules was elevated to a semi-divine status.
Was Hercules a historical person?
I think so. Okay. I mean, I don't know that for sure. Yeah. There's stories about him. But
there's the Buddha, who was literally a historical person.
Right, but he was not claiming to be God.
He never claimed to be God, and most Buddhists don't believe him to be God, but I believe there are some that give him deified status.
Right, yeah. There's a lot of, especially when we're talking about the East, at least for me, there's a lot of kind of shades of things going on. You really can't tack it on to being one thing or the other.
When it comes to, let's look at the two biggies in the Far East throughout world history, and that is Buddhism and Hinduism.
Right.
Hinduism has many gods. I believe there's something like 333 gods.
I was just listening to a show about that. This is practically the only thing I know about Hinduism, so I don't want to get it out here.
Go for it.
There was a Hindu who was trying to describe their belief in God, and their belief, according to him, was they're both polytheistic and monotheistic. They can be, depending on how you look at things, is their belief.
I once interviewed on the Beneath the Surface television show a Hindu, what's the name of a Hindu priest? I can't remember what title he had. Forgive me, Hindus. And if by the way, if you know, please give me a call here at WCAP 978-454-4980. But for lack of a better term, a Hindu priest. And he was very subjective in the way that he spoke.
Yeah.
Almost relativistic. I tried to pin him down on several things, but it was very difficult.
Right. From my understanding of Indians who were not Hindus, they were actually Catholics. Hinduism is very diverse. There is no real central theology place where you can look to and say this is Hinduism, because it's actually several, like a school of things.
Basically, Hinduism originally meant the way of the Indians, the way of life and the way of looking at life, and with that came many gods eventually. And I know that one branch of Hinduism does believe in a sort of a triad of gods, which is interestingly similar to Christianity. Shiva, Krishna, and I think there was another one, it's slipping my mind. I studied world's religions, and I need to brush up on it again. But so Hinduism has many gods. Buddhism, I would say, has no gods.
Yeah.
Buddhism is a philosophy of losing yourself to the great oneness of reality, whatever that is.
My understanding is that Buddhism is a Hindu heresy,
and it could have started that way.
They have sort of the same sort of roots, but Hinduism, Buddhism went definitely in a different sort of track.
Yeah, Buddhists. There is what they have in common. They probably have several things in common, but certainly one of them is reincarnation.
Yeah,
the notion of reincarnation. But nirvana, things like that are very similar.
People use the word karma these days quite a bit.
Karma is certainly something borrowed from Eastern philosophy. But that's it. It's probably more of a philosophy than a religion, even to this day, since there are no deities in Buddhism. But bottom line is that throughout the pre-modern world, polytheism was the norm.
Pretty much, and there is a view kind of related to that is pantheism, which is the view that God is equal to the universe or the world.
Not equal in value, but God is the universe.
Right.
So if you were to point to anything in the universe, you'd have to say that is God.
Right.
Yeah, including me and you.
And the problem with that sort of thing is trying to define good and evil, in there. With monotheism, you have a much clearer picture. This is good. God is good, and we have a picture of that.
Yeah.
And we can go from there and say these things are evil. But it gets kind of a little more sloppy, I think, with pantheism.
I think you bring up a really good point, because with Judaism and Christianity, the distinction between good and evil is not sort of harmonic things coming together like male and female, but rather it is a fullness of being versus a lack of that fullness of being. So in Christianity, evil is not a thing. It's actually a lack of something that ought to be, sort of like darkness is to light. Right?
Yeah. And going back to polytheism, their creation stories are destructive.
Yeah.
You have the world already made, and there's kind of like a breaking down, and that sort of establishes things, new order. Usually there's I think for the Greeks and the Romans, there was a prior set of gods that had to be defeated, and then there was a newer set that took control of things. But for monotheism, especially for the Jewish faith, you have this idea of not creation involving destruction, but rather creation coming out of nothing, which is a very sharp distinction from what you've seen in polytheism.
Yeah, I think Judaism and the book of Genesis in particular introduced something very radical to the world, and that is that the universe was created out of nothing. In other creation stories, if you look at a lot of the ancient creation stories, it's not really creation stories. They're really formation stories.
Mm-hmm.
They take the stuff of the universe and they reform it, and like you say, sometimes they destroy it to reform it. And that's their creation stories, but that's not really creation. That's taking what has already been, what already exists, and doing or molding it to their own liking.
Right. And there's this view with these sorts of gods. These are gods inside the universe.
Mm.
And what we have...
Part of the universe.
Part of the universe.
Yeah.
Of the universe. They're really just supreme beings, you know. And I think a lot of people view them with material bodies. These deities have some sort of way of being material and interacting with people in that sort of way.
Would you say that these gods of the ancient worlds were kind of like superheroes are today?
Yeah.
They're super human beings, in a sense.
Yeah, I was thinking about that on the way here today. It was this thing, Superman. I think they directly, in one of the recent movies about Superman, they compare him to a god.
Yes.
And I think, that is more of the ancient polytheistic view of God, is the God is in the universe, you know,
so,
you can detect him.
So with polytheism, there is no sense of transcending the created order, because nothing is created.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. God is obviously not part of creation or in creation in order to create it.
Right. So then you have two alternatives with that kind of purview. You have the notion of pantheism, which basically states everything is God. So everything of the universe is God. Therefore, God in that sense is eternal, which means the universe is eternal. It was never created.
Right, and that was the ancient thought back then.
Yeah, so that's pantheism, and that's kind of a little weird, at least intuitively, to say that you and I, which are a part of this universe, are God.
Yeah.
And everything else is, too.
But it's not that far off from the Christian kind of idea of being divinized, which is a little bit different.
we'll get to that in a second, but the other alternative to the monotheistic understanding of religiosity is what we've been talking about, polytheism. And that is that these limited beings, which aren't perfect, if you look at the pantheon of gods and most of these cultures, they're very imperfect, in fact. They have human frailties.
Right. There's some bad gods and there's some good gods,
So, and they're very limited, and they are they're...
Well, you can kill them. You can kill these
Greek gods. You can even kill gods. That's weird. I thought all gods were immortal in people's minds.
Well, the fact that somehow there was an old set of gods that were overthrown by a new set of gods, somehow that immortality isn't quite the same sort of thing.
When I ever ask questions Socratically and logically to people who have beliefs in either ancestor worship or many gods, there really is no logical order to their beliefs. You know what I mean? If you were to try to use reason and say, well, where did this all begin and why, and try to make it into a holistic kind of system that works at least intelligibly for our minds, that does not work with particularly Eastern philosophies and religions.
Right, it's kind of confusing.
They're not even interested in that. All that matters is this is our tradition and this is what we believe, and
it's very, very mystical in a sort of way.
Very mystical, yeah, very mystical, but not rational or reasonable. Now, tell me how Western religion, which includes Judaism and Christianity, and some would say Islam, how these religions differ from that.
Well,
are these conceptions of God?
Right. I think one of the things that was historically fortunate. We had the God revealing Himself to the Jews, but at the same time we had over in Greece or the Athens, you had a development. There was they were thinking about God rationally, and
Socrates, Plato, Aristotle,
and there was a general sense that this polytheism doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I think there were a lot of people who were kind of not taking that seriously at that time.
Right around the 5th or 4th century BC, this kind of thinking began with Socrates and Aristotle.
And you had Aristotle really formulating this monotheistic view of God. And I remember when I read this, when Aristotle said that God is pure act, I said to myself, Aristotle's a Catholic.
Can I just give a perspective to the listeners? Aristotle lived in the 4th century BC, which means that he did not have access to Christianity because Christianity didn't exist on the earth yet. He did not have access to Judaism because it was in another part of the world. So Aristotle came through human reason alone to the conclusion that there must be, or there is, a first cause, a God that started the world, that created the world, that ordered the world, but not necessarily, according to Aristotle, a God that cared about the world. Bob.
Right. His God was probably closer to a deist sort of conception of God. God was a being. I don't think that Aristotle worked out all the implications of what God is, but he came with a pretty good sort of thing. I think this is, with Aristotle, you can come up with a concept of classical theism, where you can talk about the God of the philosophers and the God of the monotheistic religions as being sort of similar.
So in other words, if you were to work out something called natural theology today, you would come to many of the conclusions that Aristotle did without divine revelation.
Right.
We're going to talk more about this and more different conceptions of God that are going on today here on Beneath the Surface. I'm hearing an interesting song in my ear. Let's see what in the world this is. Is this Queen? No? All right, you have to tell me after the break. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. I'm Paul Morano. Back right after this. Yeah. I know this song. I very much know the song, but it's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, I can't remember the title either.
Gosh and a half, what is this song? All right, Cindy, let me know, what is it?
You don't remember Goody Two Shoes by Adam Ant?
Was that it?
Yeah.
Okay, I know the song, I just didn't know who it was by, or the name. How about the one before the break? What was that? What in the world was that you threw at us?
That was the Shaker Hymn, Simple Gifts, by a group called the King Singers. They do They do a bunch of Christian stuff and really cool stuff.
All right. That's Cindy. Her show is right after ours. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio, 980 on your dial. Paul Morano here with Mr. Bob LeBlanc, speaking about tonight rival conceptions of God throughout history. So Bob, before we leave Aristotle, I just want, if you could say in one sentence or less, what you mean by Aristotle concluded that God was pure act.
Well, you need to know a little bit about the philosophy that Aristotle had. I mean, it starts with the four causes and trying to understand that. But beyond that or beneath that, that Aristotle is trying to work out how change happens.
Yep.
And so he saw two opposing things. He saw potentiality, which is something that has the potential to be something else.
Hmm.
And there's actuality, that being actualized. And what he was saying by pure act is he's talking about God being unlimited. There is nothing that would limit God.
Hmm.
Is because God is completely actualized. There is no potential within God.
No room for any potentiality in God. So then you could make the argument that all concrete things have the potential of changing or moving into either something else or at least the attributes can be something else. Like you start as a fetus, you continue as a baby,
as an adolescent, human being,
full adult. Then you start going on the other side of the hill. But all of those are changes.
Right.
So you're and all things in the universe have the potential to change because we're all in motion internally and externally.
Right.
But you're saying that God, since he is limitless, he is definitionless, there is no potential. He is just full actualization.
Right. And then it moves on to St. Thomas Aquinas, who really understands this very deeply, where he talks about God equaling his essence is existence.
Yes. Wrap your mind around that one. I don't know if I should go into that or not. Basically, essence means it defines the kind of being something is.
Right.
Right? So we all share being, but this piece of paper, this pen, me and you, we all differ in what kind of being we are.
Right.
Well, you and I are humans, so we're the same kind of being. But from this pen, we differ in being.
Right.
That's our essence. Humanity.
Right, and with what we're saying with God is being being itself when we make that formal.
Well, the problem with then giving a word to God, like the three-letter word God, is that the term is actually a finite term.
Right.
You can see it. It begins, it ends, it has three letters. So it doesn't really match the eternal essence, which is God's existence.
Right. We can't. A lot of people who would say, "I understand God."
Mm.
No, not really. There are things we can understand about God, but really, for a human mind to wrap itself around what God actually means
is.
There's a lot of holes there.
Aquinas says that we can. Confidently say what God is not.
Right, which is a great thing to talk about because God, Aquinas was able to know things about God or figure things out about God by saying, well, God is not this. I mean, if God is limitless, then you know, there's no things that you can say, well, he's going to limit himself by being in sort of some sort of category. We can't
Right. So just the term eternal means not time.
Right.
Or outside of time.
He's outside of time.
The word infinite means not finite,
right,
which means he cannot be defined. So all of these things are what God is not, even though they seem like positive words. They are actually negative in the sense of speaking about what God is not, and all of those creaturely attributes that we speak about for beings, for created beings, do not fit.
This is one thing that it took me quite a while to get into, to understand. When a lot of people, they think about God as being a supreme being.
Yes.
And it's wrong to say that God is one being among other beings.
Yes.
God is not even in the same category of other beings. Even though we talk about being and we say God is being itself, but to say that God is a being among other beings is a sort of category mistake. Yeah.
So I think what you're saying here is one of the most philosophically important things to understand about the Western, i.e. the Jewish and Christian understanding of God, that God is not a being, and that word "a" is very important there. That's what he is not, because we are a being.
Right.
A tree is a being. The moon is a being. A galaxy is a being. God is not a being. Rather, as Aquinas explains, God is being itself. And therefore, when he said to Moses in chapter 3 of Exodus, when Moses said, "Well, what is your name?" God simply said, "I am." He did not fill in that sentence. He left it there, "I am."
Well, the actual quote is, "I am who am."
And then tell them I am.
Then tell them I am, yes.
Sent you to me.
Right.
So there is no defining term regarding the infinite, eternal goodness that God is.
Right.
Yeah, he simply is. Or you could say he is isness.
Right. And we, actually, if you know a little bit about Platonic philosophy, You would understand that we participate in God's being.
In being.
We participate in God's goodness.
Yeah. We are not being, but we participate in being.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas God is being.
Which is a difference between deism or deism.
Yeah.
Is they kind of think of God as creating the universe, winding it up, and letting it go on its own.
Yeah.
Where Christianity or monotheism proper thinks of God as still in the process of creation. God is holding everything together right now.
Yes.
If we could imagine God not existing, that would mean the universe would not be existing.
Right. So God is both creator and sustainer and mover of the universe.
Right.
If God wanted to snap his proverbial finger, everything, all of creation would cease to exist.
If God ceased thinking
yeah.
of us,
yes.
we would cease to exist.
Okay. So this is the kind of God that philosophers say is the God of the Bible.
Right.
Okay. So then Christians and Jews believe in this kind of understanding of God. Let's see. So this kind of monotheistic understanding of God is not either or regarding God's transcendence or immanence.
Right.
Right.
Most of them, in fact, I think all of the three monotheistic religions have this sense that God is both transcendent, meaning he's beyond the universe.
Yes.
But that God is immanent, meaning that God is concerned with the events that happen here on earth
and intimately involved
and
intimately in his creation.
Involved. And with Christianity, that is really deep with the incarnation, meaning
right.
that most of the time you talked about God for polytheism, you had all these sons of gods.
Right.
There's this kind of idea that God was born, but what Christianity is talking about something different here. It's actually God, the transcendent God, from outside of all creation, entering into his creation.
So the Christian God created time, space, and matter all together.
Right.
And he decides to become part of his creation, like an author decides to write himself in as a character.
Right, exactly.
And that's what Jesus is about. He becomes part of the incarnation. He becomes part of his own creation.
Right, and we use that as evidence of God's love for his creation and for fallen humanity.
Now, the Christian God also is personal, which is very different from, say, deist kind of gods and other forms.
There are various kind of views. Like we see, like in Star Wars, there's this kind of force that's kind of like a all controlling sort of thing, but it's not intelligent, doesn't have its own will. With a personal God, what we mean is this is a God that we can pray to, who will respond to our prayers.
There can be relationship with
this
God.
There can be relationship with this.
So God isn't a distant force. Even though we can philosophize about God that he is immovable, that he is eternal, that he is infinite, that he is all-knowing, that he is all-good, all of these things do not point to an impersonal force.
Right.
They point to a personal and an infinitely loving personal God.
Right, right, right. And it makes sense. One of the definitions I wanted to bring out was St. Anselm's definition of God.
Okay, all right.
Something than which nothing greater can be thought.
Yes.
And if you think about that definition, as is, if you can think of something greater than that, then that's the previous conception of God was not God.
Was not enough.
Was not enough. And and try to think of a God that's not personal. I think there's this is the highest that we can get to as far as a level of being is to be personal.
Yeah,
we think of angels as personal, and we also think of God as personal.
Well, when we look at the animal kingdom, we see ourselves, and a lot of animal rights activists might say that this is ethnocentric androcentric. But we do think of ourselves as the highest of the animal kingdom and the hierarchy of being because we're persons.
Right.
Non-personal animals, we call them beasts.
Right. Well, we recognize that they don't have that intellect and free will. We don't put animals in jail to punish them.
Right.
And so there's that kind of evidence that there's a real person when you you're thinking that they have intellect and will.
So according then to the Christian conception of God, this God not only became one of us, but before that, he created us in his own image and likeness. Since he is tripersonal, he created us as not just animals, certainly not as robots, but as persons,
right,
just like himself.
We are free to accept or reject God.
Yes. Yeah, relationship.
It's a relationship.
Persons relate.
Yeah, God wants our love. He doesn't want robotic love. We're just saying what we're programmed to say, but rather a real, actual choice to love God.
Freely choosing to say yes to the invitation.
Right.
And that's really what religion is based upon, isn't it?
Right.
God loves because that's his nature. He wants us to be in union with him past this life for all eternity. And it is us being persons, we have free will, we can either say yes or no to that love and that union.
Right. Religion is a way for us to relate to God.
Yes.
It's a kind of telling us how we can do that.
Okay. I know you wanted to, we only have a few minutes left, I know you wanted to talk about this notion called moralistic therapeutic deism. Could you tell us what you mean by that?
Well, it seems to be I guess the best description of it is that it's kind of the American civic religion right now, the kind of emerging religion, but it's not really a formal religion.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a thing that's parasitic on various religions. Not
right.
Even if we're talking about Hindu or Muslim or somebody like that or Christian. They would all kind of say the same sort of thing in America. There's kind of a view of God that is kind of a collection of kind of thought, and it's predominant among the young, but you would see it among older people. We see it in the Catholic Church. We'd call it the Church of Nice.
Okay. So it's not the full gospel, it's just a little portion of the gospel.
Right. It's not about salvation or anything like that. God is...
It's about being nice to people.
It's about being nice to people in the sense that I didn't kill anybody like Hitler did.
Right. I'm okay.
Therefore, I'm okay. So there's a lot of kind of good things about it, but it's not a very challenging sort of view of God.
So in other words, it's not Christianity, it's not Judaism, it's not Islam, it's not really monotheistic, it's a religion that we create in our image rather than vice versa.
A little bit of that,
Because when we do that, we're able to do what we want with impunity.
Yeah, and their view of religion, that here's where the therapeutic comes in. The whole point of religion is not to have a relationship with God, but rather to feel good.
I see. So that's this thinking, not your thinking.
Right.
Yeah.
This is what the therapeutic part is. is to feel good about yourself.
Yeah. A lot of cultural Jews and cultural Christians sort of try that.
Yeah.
They
it's therapy.
They call themselves that because it makes them feel good. It gives them sort of an anchor when it comes to existence or meaning of life. But it's very sort of uncertain and almost unconscious.
Right.
It's just there, but it's not thought of.
Yeah, and the deism part is there is a relationship with God, sort of, but God is more distant. God is meant to be out there in case of emergencies.
Ah.
You know, he says, oh, something has happened. I'm not feeling good right now.
Yes.
I'm going to go and pray to God right now, and he'll make me feel better. And then if he doesn't, then maybe that's all God's fault or something like that. I'm not really well-versed in this moralistic.
But it's basically a conglomeration or perhaps even a lowest common denominator of much religious thoughts.
It is a lowest common denominator sort of thing.
Okay.
And I think that kind of explains why there's religion doesn't seem to be making much headway, because we have this soft substitute instead of the real hard, real thing.
I like that. And with this soft substitute, everyone's going to heaven, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, we should have a whole show of that soft substitute. But it looks like, or at least it sounds like, beneath the surface has to go up to the surface again.
All right, Bob.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Bob LeBlanc. Good topic tonight. Very interesting. I'll have to ponder this a lot more, as I hope you do out there. Thanks for listening, everybody. You've been listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Monday nights, 10 to 11. We'll see you again next Monday, but don't you go anywhere, because Cindy's Vinyl Vault coming up right after the news.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.